Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a destination. This week, I'm happy to welcome Sam Severance, owner and founder of Buna Cafe in Brooklyn, New York, to talk about Ethiopian cuisine and culture. So hi, Sam. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Brianna. Great to be here.
So we've got a lot to cover, but I want to kind of start out by getting a general like lay of the land of Ethiopia. And I want to talk about the climate, the topography, and then, of course, we're going to deep dive into the food.
Sure.
So you're not from Ethiopia, but you've visited.
I have. Yeah, I've been I was there 5 years ago.
So maybe you can tell me a little bit about your experience and what you took home with you and your trip, I guess. We'll start there.
Sure. Well, first of all, Ethiopia is a very diverse country topographically. It's pretty large. I mean, it's bigger than Texas. And I'm from Texas, that's why I bring that up. But it has a very diverse topography, ranging from deserts to rainforests to mountains to grassland. So the fauna, the flora, is very varied too. So the cuisine contains a lot of different varieties of vegetables. My time was spent in Addis Ababa and around the capital, and I was there to, I was a graphic designer at the time. I was there to try to start a freelance incubator for people to learn graphic design. My interest had been there. I had been interested in Ethiopia for a while just because of the people I had met and the friends I had made from that region. And then I was there for a month, and in the process of working on my project, I got really deep into the food culture and the how the food and dining meshes really close with just day-to-day life, and how they treat it very with a lot of respect, and they make sure that the ambiance around the food is appealing to the senses beyond just tastes.
And I'm really interested in your story. So you were there 5 years ago, you had that experience, and then obviously you came back, and
yeah,
now you're a restaurateur of
one
of your many hats, I think, that you wear. But so tell me a little bit about that journey.
Well, I came back with a bug in my butt to do something. And I worked for a little while on an idea for a packaged food company, but that got a little bit bigger than what I was capable of at the time. And then I met my current partner, Liu, at a coffee shop, and just randomly, and we started talking and decided that we should keep talking because we had similar interests. And over the course of the next few months, we hammered out somewhat of an idea of what we wanted to do. We knew we wanted to do something in food, focusing on Ethiopian food and culture. The biggest representation of that is coffee. Ethiopia is considered the birthplace of coffee, and coffee there is used more than just a beverage to get you from point A to point B, but actually the ambiance, the smells, the process of making coffee is a ritual there. It's considered part of like the aesthetic of everyday life, and everybody grows coffee. You know, it's unlike the plantation environment of other countries. It's grown in your backyard. And so we wanted to focus on that and then also focus on the food and bring those together to give a full experience.
Well, it sounds kind of serendipitous, like you met a coffee shop, you know, two guys just kind of like throwing ideas back and forth.
Yeah.
And then here we are, you know, 4 or 5 years later. So I do want to talk more about that. I wanted to get into the coffee culture. I wanted to, to get into how you guys honor that at Buna and a little bit more of the history. But I do want to back up, since this is like a travel-related show and you yourself were a traveler to Ethiopia, I just want to learn a little bit more about when you were there, like what were some of your favorite dishes? What were the kind of like aha moments where you're like, wow, like what am I eating? What is this?
Yeah. Well, ironically, first of all, our restaurant is vegan. I am not vegan. I have no problem saying that. I respect, of course, vegan culture. We'll go into that later, why we're vegan, but there's a good reason. But my one of my greatest experiences outside of eating, it's interesting. Like they do, you have to find, I was in the capital, so it's a very cosmopolitan city. So a lot of times you have to kind of find the local food. It doesn't like pop up at you. Like you have to go
and look for it.
Yeah. Because otherwise they love Italian food. There's a lot of Italian restaurants. You go to a restaurant, it'll be like Italian menu, pizza. And then the very bottom will be like local food, you know, like two things, but you find it. The thing is you get people to show it to you, or you go to people. So the other thing is that everybody invites you to their place to
eat
dinner.
Very hospitable.
Very hospitable. You'll meet them that day, and that night you're at their place eating dinner with their family and drinking Ethiopian honey wine and not remembering what happened the following day.
What were some of those dishes they were serving you in the homes then?
Okay. Well, the first experience I remember is one of the friends I made took me to tibbsbet, which is tibbs is the Ethiopian roasted meat. They usually use beef, or it can be anything, but it's mainly beef. He took me there, and it was a hole in the wall place, no sign, corrugated roof. Walk to a counter. There's a guy, and behind him there's a bunch of racks of sides of beef. And you point out which one you want, he scrapes it off and puts it in a pan, roasts it, and boom. And it's cheap. It's like, you know, a couple dollars. You get this really spicy sauce and some limes and a Coke.
And everything is like made from scratch, like these sauces, and everything's really fresh, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Is there a dish there that everyone was like a national dish or something that everyone's like, you have to try this?
There is a couple. Doro Wat is very famous. You know, it's Ethiopia. It's chicken. In a spicy beverage based sauce and with a hard boiled egg, and the veggie side, shiro is like the peanut butter of Ethiopia. Peanut butter and red shiro is incredible. It's ground chickpeas or split peas, mixed with onion, garlic, a little bit of oil, actually a lot of oil. And sometimes some berbere, which is the Ethiopian curry of sorts.
Is that used like ubiquitously? Like when you say peanut butter, it's like I could just put it on anything? Or is it like tamarind meats? Or it's like
shiro is eaten with injera, which is the bread, the sourdough flatbread. Injera is the bread. I mean, if you go over there, every region has their own cuisine, and it's not uniform. But in general, people make injera in most parts of the country, and that is considered like the staple of Ethiopian food. So like shiro and injera is like peanut butter on bread. I wish I had known it in college. I would have loved my life a lot more.
And when you were over there, tell me a little bit about your experience of like things that you guys like know exist in Ethiopia, things that you find there, your partners, your chef, but that you have some trouble with like here in New York, or can you kind of like acclimate and make substitutions? Like how extreme is that?
You mean like as far as like sourcing food or
yeah, or just ingredients that you can find in Ethiopia to create the cuisine, but it's a little bit more difficult here.
Yeah, it's a problem. And we rectify it by either sourcing from D.C., which has a huge Ethiopian population, or even just getting
to live there. So lots of Ethiopian food there. Yep.
Yeah. Or having things shipped directly from Ethiopia. We have friends coming back and forth all the time. So
suitcases full of as much as you can fit back. Yeah.
Powder, red silk suitcases full of red powder that you're praying won't explode on a trip.
Or get like commandeered by customs when you come back through. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty commonplace thing. So we never have a problem with it.
Well, I just want to ask also kind of about some of the history as you understand it about the cuisine. Some of these dishes sound, you know, very traditional, very rooted in tradition. Like in your understanding, how much has the cuisine changed over time? I mean, obviously Italian, we know where that's coming from. That's more recent.
Yeah.
But going kind of like way back.
I think some of these dishes have been the same for a few hundred years. Mm-hmm. But there has been a good deal of outside influence, Middle Eastern influence, even European influence. And I think it's constantly changing. I think if you go to an Ethiopian restaurant today, I'm going to guess because I don't know. Mm-hmm. There has been some books written about the history of Ethiopian food. Actually, there's one or two, I think, that I can think of off the top of my head. And it does, they do trace back, like, the idea of, like, Shiro, they trace back hundreds of years. Gomen, which is a collard green dish, it's pretty simple, but it's really, really good. That's been traced back quite a bit. But also, even today, even like when we, in our restaurant, we do, we take traditional dishes and do a different spin on it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's constantly changing. And I think it's changing a lot more now because Ethiopian food is becoming a lot more in the public face.
That's a great segue, because we'll start getting more kind of into that. But do you think that Ethiopian food not only is, like you just said, having more of like an acceptance, but it still has like a long way to go for people to kind of understand what, like, I guess this is the best way to put it. In your terms, like, if you had to explain Ethiopian food to someone, what's the simplest way to describe it?
Pretend like you're 5 years old, and what would you eat when you were five? Floppy, like floppy breads, big, great, like big mounds of saucy, you know, stews that you get to use the bread with. It's a very aesthetic, it's a very, it's finger food for the, for one, and it's very intimate food. It's you're right, it is hard to explain to people or even get people to like try it for the first time because you have to kind of have an open mind.
Yeah, there's an intimidation factor. I guess, yeah. Like, how do you, in your business, like, work through that with people?
We start a restaurant in Bushwick. We've had no problem here because a lot of people, you know, this is already a pretty open-minded community, and because we've been doing, you know, we were, I'm sure we'll talk about this, but we were a pop-up restaurant for a long time. Yeah. So we built our following before, and it was people that were actually looking for Ethiopian food or that came to the place we were popping up not knowing we were there, and you know, they happened to have had it before and it reminded them and they're like, oh, okay, I want to try it again. So a lot of the way we got started was because people recognized that it was Ethiopian food and they'd had it before. And then now there's a restaurant, we have those people coming in, bringing in their friends that haven't had it before. And now they're trying it and they have a little bit of encouragement because their friends have done it.
It's like literally word of mouth.
Yeah. But the neighborhood helps a lot because it isn't a very open neighborhood, open to new ideas like this.
And how about your chef? Like, where did that partnership come from? Is that a friend of your partner's?
Yeah.
Who knew? Okay.
So our chef, Khadija, when we did our first dinner party, we were vetting for chefs for a good 6 months or so. And then she was a friend of, my partner met her. And she's never worked in a kitchen before, like a commercial kitchen. Mm-hmm. But she has, she's vegetarian and she's cooked vegetarian food for herself and also for her family of six brothers and sisters the whole time. So she's very like comfortable in a kitchen and she's a food artist. She has very good tastes, very good perspective on how to like, and she just knows how to make these dishes really, really well. So we put her, like we tried her out for our first dinner party and it just went off beautifully. Like she made amazing food and the recipes are pretty much hers. Most of the recipes are hers and she's killing it in the kitchen. She's just doing really, really well.
Awesome. And I know whenever we talk about food, I want to talk about drinks as well. We talked about coffee. We talked about honey wine. Is there anything else that you're going to find traditionally in Ethiopian as far as like beverages are concerned?
Yeah, really good teas. Mm-hmm. We have shai instead of chai. Shai. Similar. Cardamom. It's black tea spiced with cardamom, cloves, ginger, and cinnamon. Yeah. We do a tosin, which is a thyme and ginger tea, caffeine-free. Mm-hmm. Really good herbal flavor. Great if you're sick or hungover, by the way. Also, we do a layered juice called esprit, which is amazing. Esprit is it's pureed fruits that are layered on top of each other like a smoothie. And then all the fruits have distinctive colors, so you get to see all the different layers. We do a three-layer juice. In Ethiopia, you can go to coffee shops or restaurants and find up to five layers. We do a papaya, mango, avocado. Pie avocado mango juice layered on top of each other with a little grenadine syrup and a lime, and it's incredible. It's really, really good.
It does sound delicious. Mm. And I get the sense you've talked about the spices in the shai.
Shai, yeah.
All right, make sure I got that right. And then also, you know, with the meats and whatnot. So I'm assuming there's like, is Ethiopian food spice heavy?
It can be spicy, but it's not like...
Not spicy, but like, you know,
spice
clove,
heavy.
Cardamom, like, yes. Like, just, I feel like geographically it kind of sits at that crossroads between, you know, Europe and Asia, and historically we probably had a lot of influence from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, a lot of Middle Eastern mm-hmm. Indian influence. There's a lot, like cardamom is used widely. Cinnamon.
Cumin.
Actually, no.
Not so much.
You don't see much cumin in the cuisine.
That's interesting.
But there's also a lot of native spices. The Ethiopian red pepper, which is what is used to make berbere. Berbere is like the Ethiopian curry. It's a mixture of, you know, up to 20, 30 spices. No two people make the same berbere. It's a very personal thing. And it contains a lot of different familiar spices and unfamiliar, like ajwan. I know that's in that. Cardamom, you know. Onion powder. It varies, but there's like a certain amount of spices that are pretty standard in it. And that is, so there are a lot of native spices that are included in the food, and then there are a lot more that are borrowed as well.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be learning more about Buna Cafe in Ethiopia with Sam.
You are listening to Lazy by Poolboy 92. This is the Rec Tech Remix. And this is Native on heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I'm talking to Sam Severance, owner and founder of Buna Cafe in Brooklyn, New York. So let's kind of pick up where we left off, talking about Ethiopian cuisine. I want to learn more about Buna. So you mentioned you started as a pop-up. That was going really well. Now you've got the brick and mortar. So tell me more about what's going on today right now.
Right now we have a restaurant in Bushwick. It's going really well. We serve lunch, dinner, and we do brunch on weekends, our custom-made Ethiopian brunch. We're a vegan restaurant, so everything we do is vegan. We also work at Smorgasburg. Smorgasburg starting up this weekend, so we'll be at Smorgasburg.
Tis the season. Spring is upon us.
Waited long enough, right? And then we do cooking classes every month. We actually have one today. We do them once a month at Fine and Raw around the corner from where we are. Yeah, great folks. Great, really good chocolate. And we still do the occasional pop-up. Now that we have a permanent spot, if we do a pop-up, it's going to be a curated one, something specific. And we try to do, we're doing a lot more like curated events, music events, mm-hmm. trying to bring in Ethiopian musicians, big name musicians to the neighborhood. And we are doing music at Buna as well. We do Wednesday night performances at 9 o'clock. So it's called Under the Grass. We have a stage mm-hmm. where we perform the coffee ceremony, and it has a grass roof over it. So we call it Under the Grass Roof Music Series. And we're trying to build a little more, make it a little more of a venue for world music and folk, you know, not over the top. I mean, just like low key world music and not just African or Ethiopian, but a lot of different genres.
Well, let's back up and touch on a couple of things you brought up. Let's start with the vegan. What's behind the decision to be a vegan restaurant?
So Ethiopia has a interesting vegan culture. The Orthodox Church, Ethiopian Orthodox Church, is the primary religion there. It's a very ancient Christian religion. And when they do fasting, they fast for Lent. They have a 7-week Lent period, and then they fast usually 2 days a week during the year. So almost half the year they're fasting. When they fast, they abstain from all meat products and alcohol. So they're vegan. Much of the country is vegan half the time of the year. So they made a vegan cuisine to get them through those periods, because otherwise they love their meat. They have really good meat culture. All the meat there is organic, you know, and, you know, pretty farm raised, and they do wonderful iterations of cooking meat. But all the other time they're vegan. So the culture, the vegan cuisine, has been cultured for, it's been, you know, grown for many centuries, and it's not meant as a substitute for anything. They don't substitute any meat product with something.
There's no, like, tofu.
There's no tofu. No tofu, no seitan, no tempeh. And I'm not knocking that. I mean, yeah, it works in certain circumstances. But for a lot of vegans, it's nice to, they appreciate eating a cuisine that's time-honored vegan and is what it is, and not trying to be something else.
And obviously really healthy.
Very healthy. Very good. Yeah, very healthy, very spicy. I mean, not spiced.
Well, and all the benefits you get, the medicinal benefits from the spices and, yes, the herbs, and obviously the vegetables, of course.
Yes, and it works. And the reason we decided to do vegan is because of that. It's a cleaner way to run a restaurant. And it's a statement on, we wanted to, again, we're not vegan, but I do appreciate and respect, mm-hmm, the idea of eating, abstaining from animal products, just eating vegan food occasionally, or just in general, like being aware of what you eat and putting everything in moderation. So, I mean, for me, I've learned to, you know, I'm a boy from Texas, so I love my barbecue. For me, I've learned to, like, temper that a bit and sit, and you can eat this food. You can be a meat eater and eat this food and feel satiated, which a lot of meat eaters complain about not liking vegan food because they don't feel like they're actually full.
Oh, yeah. Hungry like an hour later.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. So you mentioned the vegan culture and how that relates to religion and, mm-hmm, Lent, but now we're coming up on Easter. So, mm-hmm, let me kind of ask this two ways. Is there a most important, like, food related holiday in Ethiopia? Yes. And then also with Easter coming up, is there a special celebration of sorts with Easter?
There is. Ethiopian Easter is called Fasica. Mm-hmm. It's celebrated on, this year it's going to be on the 12th of April. And yeah, everybody basically breaks their fast, eats a whole bunch of meat, dances, drinks, gets completely drunk, and everything they've been putting off for the past 7 weeks, mm-hmm, they enjoy. That's a big one. Also, there's another one called Mescal. It's in late September. It's it celebrates the tradition of finding the true. They apparently found a piece of the cross. Like, there's a legend that they found the piece of the cross in Ethiopia, the original cross of Jesus. And so that's that finding. And that's also, that entails a big feast, usually of lamb or beef. I mean, it's very similar to other cultures around there where you don't eat a lot of meat, but when you do, you eat it well. You know, mm-hmm, it's like it's meant for special occasions. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, you're eating veggie.
And so when you were kind of describing Buna and, like, what you guys are doing, you have mentioned a lot of events, mm-hmm, and that's obviously, like, a cornerstone of what you do. How did that organically grow? Like, you started with, like, one, and now you're kind of just doing, I mean, all kinds of things, cooking classes, music, yeah, different, and the coffee ceremony. We'll, yeah, kind of, let's wrap up with that at,
okay,
the end.
Well, I guess we don't really have an off switch, which can be good and bad, but I'm really tired. No, I'm kidding. So 3 years ago when we all met, when Liu and I met, and then when we brought Khadija on, we started doing dinner parties, secret dinner parties in my friend's apartment. We'd gut her apartment. She graciously let us, like, completely gut her apartment once a month, and we would make a restaurant out of it. And she, and then we did that once a month, and we started building a following through email lists and just word of mouth. And then we started being more public. We'd do, like, food festivals. We'd do, like, street fairs. Roberta's, when they did their block party, we had a thing out here. And then after a little bit of that, I decided I would just go into bars and that didn't serve food and offer to be their restaurant for a night. And that's how we kind of started the pop-up thing. And we had like a regular rotation, about four or five bars that we'd do that in the neighborhood. And I would choose ones that were up and coming and try to make a name for themselves too. Mm-hmm. So that we could grow together.
It's like community.
Yeah. And then we did that for a bit. And then I worked with other ones. Like I know the owner of Little Skips down in Deep Bushwick, great little coffee shop. We did a 3-day dinner music event, which just blew it out of the roof. We were completely packed. We got a lot of customers from that. And then finally, about a year and a half ago, we were trying to find a little more permanence. And then I had a restaurant nearby called Mama Joy's, which is a southern food, fried chicken, shrimp and grits. And I noticed they weren't serving lunch. They only had dinner service. So I went over and asked the owner if we could do a lunch counter there and then rent out their kitchen so we could also cook for other events or smorgasbord and stuff like that. So we set up an agreement, and we would do regular lunch counter like Tuesday to Friday. Gave us a little more permanence, gave us the ability to find us. And that blew up. We got written up by the New York Times within a couple months, which was huge. And eventually, Mama Joyce went out of business, so we negotiated with the owner to take over the lease, and we had to jump on it. We had no time at all. We had no money. We had about 6 weeks to build it out before we had to start paying rent. Mm-hmm. So we did a really fast Indiegogo campaign. Used scrimped and saved, grabbed whatever we had in our bank account. Did an Indiegogo campaign. Built everything ourselves through the whole polar vortex winter of last year.
Oh gosh.
And managed to open up. Didn't have a liquor license. Didn't know what was going to happen. Didn't know if we were going to make rent. We opened up. First day we opened up, it was packed. The place was packed.
Awesome. So that's all going really well for you.
Yeah.
What other projects are you looking towards that you like want to do more?
Well, we're talking about opening another location. Mm-hmm. But
in Brooklyn, in the city?
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. Yeah. I mean, there's always talk about that. There's talk about doing things in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. There's talk about... there's a lot of things, but it's all very nascent, so I don't know how much.
Yeah, no, it's right totally now. Fine. It just sounds like you guys have your fingers on a lot of different pulses.
There
and
is.
And everything's going really well, so you just want to kind of keep pushing the envelope and keep experimenting.
I would say like in the next year and a half, there'll be something coming up.
Awesome. Yeah. And before we wrap up, let's talk about the coffee ceremony and how people can like learn about that and get in on that at Buna.
Okay. We do coffee ceremonies Wednesday, Friday at 7, and then Saturday and Sunday at 5. Mm-hmm. If you come and eat, you can sit and watch the ceremony, and you'll get coffee for free at the end of the ceremony.
Who's doing the ceremony?
Usually Khadija does.
Okay.
It. Yeah. She's the master of ceremonies in literally many aspects, yeah. And it's very informal and matter of fact, but it just creates it's part of the ambiance of the restaurant. So it's not like we're going to say, hey, we're doing the coffee ceremony. We just do it. And mm-hmm. then you look around, you see it, and then you're welcome. But you're welcome to come up and experience it. Talk to Khadija about it. We have a lot of information on it. And you get to watch the whole process of making coffee from raw bean to the brew. The coffee itself is a strong, not quite espresso, but close with a strong brew with an infusion of cardamom and cloves. Mm-hmm. So it's very well spiced. It's, people compare it to Turkish coffee in a lot of ways. And it wakes you up. It's really good. It doesn't make you frantic, but it gives you like this mellow buzz.
And based on tradition, obviously, like how long does the ceremony take from start to finish?
About 20, 30 minutes.
Okay, that's not too bad.
In Ethiopia, they do three rounds. So they'll do one round, make coffee. And the coffee is brewed in this beautiful, elegant pot called a Jebena, which is our logo. Looks like an Aladdin's lamp. And you do one round, and then you take the grounds that are left in the pot and fill it with water, do another round, and then do a final round. And we don't do that there because we don't want people to have to go to the hospital with a heart attack. we're all major coffee drinkers anyway. But we do one round, but traditionally it can last, up an hour. But traditionally over there, like if you're doing it in somebody's house and people are coming over at the end of the day to talk about their day and like sit and chat and hang out for a long time. So that's why they do it that way.
And it can go like on and on and on and on.
It can go on and on.
Yeah, forever and ever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where can people learn more about all these events if they want to get in on it?
Okay. Our website is bunaethiopia.net, mm-hmm. B-U-N-N-A, ethiopia.net. We post events there. You can also sign up for our mailing list on that website. That's probably the best way. We send out an email every week letting you know what we're going to do. Of course, we're on Facebook, Instagram. Instagram is fantastic. This is the most photogenic food you've ever seen. So Buna Cafe Instagram. But your best bet is to get on our mailing list.
Yeah, and like Twitter and...
Twitter, like, Drink Buna.
Do you guys do like videos and stuff like you have like online? Or?
Yeah, we're on Vimeo. We have a few videos. Yeah. We have that. YouTube.
Awesome.
Just look up, just Google Buna Cafe. Have it all in front of you.
It'll work out. Yeah. All right. Well, that is all for Native today. Sam, thanks for coming in and talking all about Buna Cafe and Ethiopian cuisine. I'm going to come visit super soon. If you are in town, make sure you check it out at 1084 Flushing Avenue, Brooklyn, New York.
Thank you, Brianna. We'll have the Tosin ready for you.
All right. I will be joined by Andrea Nguyen next week to talk about Banh Mi, of course, Vietnamese cuisine, and the 50th anniversary of the fall of Saigon. Be sure to tune in live right here every Thursday morning at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.